Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
In the wake of the election, many commentators on TV have been talking about class, about trade deals, about an anti-elite revolt. But many Latinos can't shake the feeling that this election was all about race. For some perspective, we're joined on the phone by Carol Anderson. She's a professor of African American Studies at Emory University and the author of White Rage, The Unspoken Truth of Our Racial Divide. Welcome to Latino USA, Carol.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
So what is white rage and what does it have to do with this election?
White rage has everything to do with this election. White rage is the way that policies coming out of the Supreme Court, out of the White House, create ways to undermine the advancement of African Americans. I tracked it from Reconstruction all the way through Obama's election, and it was crystal clear that as African Americans moved from property to citizen, the response was intense.
Basically, what you're saying is that anything that improves the quality of life for African Americans in terms of their citizenship rights, for example, is met with actual resistance.
President Barack Obama's election was due in large measure to the 15 million new voters that came into the electorate. 2.2 million were African American. 2 million were Latinos. 600,000 were Asian Americans. Immediately after his election, state governments began implementing voter suppression laws targeted specifically at those groups. And using the language of democracy, we have to protect the integrity of the ballot box, to in fact cloak the desire to figure out how do we disfranchise this population once again. And this current election, we see the fallout from that.
What does anti-immigrant sentiment have to do with white rage?
As long as immigrants are labor without rights, America is fine with that. But the moment that the immigrant community began mobilizing and saying, we have the right to vote, we have the right to decent health care, that is when you began to see enormous backlash in terms, again, of the policies that were saying, you know, we got to deport them.
Because of the Trump campaign, because of the way that it was run, you now have the empowerment of racism. So when David Duke, the KKK, endorses Donald Trump, and there is no major pushback from that, white supremacy is now mainstream. Empowered racism saying, this is our country. And so all of you black people, all of you brown people, all of you othered people, you have no right to be here unless it is under our good graces.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Wednesday, February 22nd, 2017. So I have been told. That was Carol Anderson. She's the author of White Rage, which in my view gives a really comprehensive chronicle of white fury directed specifically at black people. I would say white terrorism directed specifically at black people, and it puts it into a historical context. She talks about this in the 19th century during the Reconstruction period after Civil War. We talked about this era before. My man Pitchfork Ben Tillman, former governor down in South Carolina. She goes over this through the Civil Rights era and certainly right now, the period during President Obama being in the White House, the response to him winning the election in 2008, and just myriads of different angry white people, this manifesting in the Tea Party. Really, really great book. I've referenced it quite a few times in some of my writing over the past 6 months or so. Might even be constructive to have her on the program. I feel like I see her or hear her so regularly that it would just be overkill, but very constructive read. Carol Anderson, White Rage. Our guest for the program today, she wrote a review of White Rage and what the book provoked in her as a white person. In fact, our Global Sunday Talk on Racism, Mr. Fox, who posts a lot of our content on YouTube, he read this article and shared and said, hey, you should check this out. She might even be worth inviting to see if she'd be willing to come on the program and share some of her views on racism. I reached out. She was willing to join us. In addition to writing this review on White Rage, Carol Anderson's book, she is the pastor of Buchel Park Baptist Church in Louisville, Kentucky. She brandishes a degree from the University of North Texas in radio, television, and film. Will be great to get some of her views on what it means to be white, why she wrote this article. Joining us live, Reverend Erica Evans Whitaker. Reverend Whitaker, you with us?
Yes, good evening, Gus.
Thank you so much for sharing a bit of your Wednesday evening. Really thankful that you could be with us on the program this evening. Anything that you would like our listeners to know about who you are, the work that you do, before we get started?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It truly is an honor to be a part of this brief moment in time. I am currently here at Buchel Park Baptist Church as their senior pastor. I'm a native Texan and just recently moved here from Dallas to Louisville last fall. So I'm navigating Kentucky waters and Louisville waters as well. And it was such a privilege to meet Carol Anderson when she came here to Louisville to give a wonderful lecture on her book last month. It was just so powerful.
Right on. Did I accurately kind of summarize what her book is about?
Oh, it was great. Okay. Very much so. Haunting in a way. Yes.
Absolutely. Encourage folks, Carol Anderson, black female, support black authors. For listeners who have not seen you, your pictures with the article that you wrote in that article that we're going to discuss, Racism Rooted in Our Country's DNA. It's linked in the description at Black Talk Radio Network. But for folks who have not seen you, you are a white woman. Is that correct, Reverend Whitaker?
Yes, I am white.
Right on. This program, I use the term racism and the term white supremacy. I use them both as synonyms. I use the same definition for both terms. The definition I use is as follows. A global system of people who classify themselves as white and are dedicated to abusing and or subjugating everyone in the known universe whom they classify as not white. Do you think such a system exists? Do you think that definition is accurate?
Yes, such a system does exist. You know, as a white person, to wrestle with my own history of whiteness can come with the good, the bad, and the ugly. I think the only kind of tension that I even feel with that definition is people who are dedicated to the subjugation. I think sometimes we can feel that we aren't dedicated externally to watching other people be subjugated or robbed of their power and liberty and equality, but sometimes our silence even does that very thing.
Man, I know Dr. King, he explicitly indicted white people who were silent, and particularly from the perspective of the victims of white supremacy, me being one, it can be very, very difficult to distinguish silence from dedication. In fact, I would say it's one and the same. You are culpable if you're not doing anything to solve this problem. So we're still back, we're right back to where we started from, in my view.
And even recognizing that there is a problem is the first step.
Okay. You did say the good, the bad, and the ugly. What is the good, if you will, of being white?
Well, this is who I am and who God created me to be. I can't change my skin and my heritage just like anybody else can't. And to acknowledge through truth-telling and honest look at history, all of the horrible things that may have done, even through my own family lineage, that I'm still kind of wrestling through, but also to accept that history itself can be redeemed and that there were good people during specific parts of history, good white people who were doing the best that they could in the era in which they were raised with integrity. I wish there were more of them, but that doesn't seem to be the case during different periods and pockets of history.
I think Dr. Kambon would say they have been statistically insignificant, and I think Carol Anderson's book would substantiate that, yeah, they have been statistically insignificant in stopping the recurring waves of white terrorism against black people.
Yes.
The one question I do try to ask, particularly when we have white people, it's been my experience, white people, a lot of times they will pussyfoot when it comes to speaking honestly about racism, and they'll just talk and not really answer questions. So if you can be as honest as possible and direct with answering questions, we really appreciate it. I wanted to ask, and these are two questions I try to ask all of the white people that come on the program. Number one, have you ever had trouble being honest when speaking with non-white people about issues related to racism? When I say having had trouble being honest, meaning withholding information, relevant, pertinent information, and or not using the most accurate term to describe things. That can come up in a myriad of different forms, but have you ever had any sort of problem being honest when talking to non-white people about racism?
Yes, I normally find myself stumbling through that with immigrants and refugees, particularly those that do not speak English well. I personally oftentimes find myself consciously or even unconsciously thinking, you know, maybe they don't understand, but it's not an understanding. It's the way that I'm presenting information. So yes, I do find myself doing that.
Having trouble being honest?
Yes, having trouble being honest and trusting them with all the information.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We had a non-white author. He wrote an essay about 2 years ago, roughly. He was talking about racism. This was a non-white person. And in that article, he said that white people are often sincerely and greatly pained by racism, but rarely are they pained enough. And this is in a mainstream publication. The first portion of that sentence, I've been asking white people, do you think that that is true based on your experience with white people, your study of racism? Do you think that white people are often sincerely and greatly pained by racism, like a substantial number of white people? Do you think that that's a true statement for them?
No, I don't think that's a true statement, because often and not, it's not a true statement for myself.
Appreciate that. We have had a number of white people over the years who have come forward and truthfully said, yeah, that is not an honest statement. I, too, think that is a false statement. And that gets back to what I said. A lot of times we talk about racism, people are just not being truthful, particularly when we talk about white people. A lot of times folks are just not telling the truth. Has any in your time, either Texas, now Kentucky, have any non-white people, have they ever suspected you of being a racist, Reverend Whitaker?
You know, I'm not sure, because I'm probably not brave enough to ask them, and they're probably too kind to say that to my face over the span of conversations or relationships. So I don't know. I could speculate that, yes, probably some of them do. But I've never had anybody say that to my face before.
Okay. Do you think it's logical, given the history, what Carol Anderson writes about, do you think it's logical for any non-white person to suspect that any white person, including you, could be a racist?
Yes. I think there's history, and I mean, the history itself discloses that of white people forming in groups. I mean, Carol just paints this picture perfectly in her book of people gathering to watch the lynching of black men, gathering as if it is some gladiator arena. You know, that history alone is rooted within my own history. You know, so yes, I mean, as horrible as it sounds.
Appreciate that. Were you in Texas in 1998 when James Byrd Jr. was dragged behind that truck in Jasper, Texas?
So I just moved. I've only been to Jasper, Texas once. We had moved from Denver, Colorado right before the Columbine shooting. So this would have been 99. And Jasper, Texas is in East Texas. And we moved to Central Texas, probably 4 hours from that location.
Okay, that's interesting about the Columbine shooting. Okay, but you said you just moved to Kentucky. So were you in Dallas this summer when the police shooting happened?
I was in Dallas. Yes.
Wow, that is an interesting moment of racism, I would say, for sure.
Yeah.
What? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that was. I mean, because oftentimes we excuse our apathy for not having incidents like that be close at home because we're so far removed from that. And even social media will numb us to the harsh realities of things that happen in people's backyards all the time. And so that moment in Dallas was a harsh reality check of, goodness, this happens all the time across our country and across the world.
Wow. Trying to remember some of the main things that stood. I think number one, the black male who was at, it was a Black Lives Matter rally, peaceful march where this shooting happened. But there was a black male who was at that event, and he had a rifle legally. He had his open carry rifle. He had on a military fatigue T-shirt. And after the shooting, his picture was everywhere. People saying, where is this guy? Where is this guy? Like, he had turned himself in. I think from the reports I read, his rifle was not even loaded. He was talking with officers, very cooperative, hadn't participated at all. He was just there. But his photo was everywhere. And, you know, I think he even filed a lawsuit saying that it jeopardized his life. And he certainly didn't think it was due process the way that he was treated. But that's one of the things that sticks out immediately.
Yes, because nothing is due process. I mean, you're really guilty until you're found innocent, which rubs against any type of founding principle.
For black people, absolutely. This was a black male.
Yes. Sorry, let me specify that. As a white woman, if I had a gun, it would have looked completely different.
Wow. What did you think of the use of the explosive device? I know that was something that we talked about on this program. I think that was unprecedented in law enforcement history, using an explosive device to literally, you know, explode a suspect in this case. What did you think of the police officer's tactic?
I was just so disturbed. I mean, especially at a peaceful march like that, to have such violence just come I don't have a lot of thoughts on that actually, at all.
We discussed that with Norm Stamper, former chief of the Seattle Police Department.
What did he
back
say
this summer? He had questions. He, in his book, he had written about a lot of the concerns that people had about the use of drones and increased technology for enforcement officers, them having cameras that can do retina scan and facial recognition. So he had already talked about this. And so then this event happened. Wow. He said there should be a lot of concerns. People should have a lot of questions about this moving forward now that there's a precedent for this sort of thing. Is this the way that we want to address, you know, policing moving forward? I think he may have been okay with them using it, but just it is something I think he did have concerns. But I think if I remember correctly, he might have been okay with them using force after the officers had been shot and killed and what have you. I think he may have been okay with force. But folks can go back in the archives. This was within this was July. This was days after the shooting, and you can hear exactly what he said about the event. With you growing up, or I guess, so where did you grow up at since you moved to Texas from Colorado? Where'd you grow up?
So I spent some time in Wichita, Kansas. My family has a farm out there. And so my brothers and I lived in several different states with my family and ultimately ended up in Texas, where my father's side of the family has a ranch. So mainly farm in Wichita, ranch in Texas.
Okay. Did you hear any racist jokes growing up in any of those areas, Kansas, Texas?
You know, explicitly, I don't remember. But that doesn't mean unconsciously. The fact that I didn't have any black friends speaks in and of itself, I should think. And for me, even living on a ranch is different than living in a city, even though the city is small. I didn't grow up in the suburbs or anything like that. But that doesn't mean I was exposed to or I wasn't exposed to racism or anything like that.
So, I mean, if you were exposed to racism, how were you exposed to racism? Do you have like details?
Probably would have surfaced in the church. I grew up in the church, Baptist church, conservative Baptist church. And to see explicitly in my mind all of the black kids bust in to our church, that in and of itself speaks to racism. You know, the busing of that, and depending on the neighborhood, I remember those images as a child. You know, the white kids would come in cars, but the black kids would come on buses. That in and of itself says something.
I don't think I've ever heard of that. Children being bused to go to church with white people. That is, fascinating. I will have to ponder on that.
You clearly didn't grow up in my parts of the town.
Wow. All right then. thankfully, I don't know how I would have felt about that.
You probably wouldn't have gone to my church.
Wow. Let's see. I might have to even come back to that after I've had a moment to process that. That is wow. That's amazing. How did you come to write this article on white rage? Again, it's titled "Racism," or at least the title that is affixed to it, "Racism Rooted in Our Country's DNA." How did you come to write this?
Gosh. So my original title was Power, 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 because racism is all about power. And I'm a part of a group. One of the first things I did was when I moved here, was I joined a group called Empower West. It's a group that meets in the West End of Louisville, which is the poor black part of Louisville, just to be very honest. And there are some phenomenal black leaders who are trying to restore and renew and empower the black community. And so I sit on Mondays and on Saturday mornings with a group of pastors. On Saturdays, they're mostly black. On Mondays, they're mostly white, because black pastors are normally bivocational because their churches can't afford them to pay full salary. And so I sit with them and I listen. And this is who put on the book read with Carol Anderson, the citywide book read, was Empower West.
Okay. Okay, so I see at the bottom they had the affixed date for the event when Carol Anderson was going to come. So, okay, so this was a part of pushing that. So you working, why did you decide that you wanted to get involved with this organization? Since it's, I think you said originally with Empower West that it was a lot of black people that are working trying to solve their problems. Why you, as a white woman, a white reverend no less, why did you want to work with them?
Well, one, I wanted to learn more about the city of Louisville and the history of it. And I also wanted to tap into one of the greatest needs of the city, and that is empowering the black community. And so I thought I'd just go check it out with having nothing to offer but ignorance, really. And listen, I think white pastors particularly do not listen well when it comes to even whispering words of reconciliation with the black church or with the black community. And so I listen.
What would your response be to folks who might say, well, hey, Reverend Whitaker, we've heard this before from white people coming to black people under the guise of saying, oh, well, I want to help. And it ends up just being that they are there to continue the system of white supremacy. And saying further, you saying that the only thing that you're showing up with is ignorance and are willing to listen, that is not what black people, particularly black people that are in a struggling position in Louisville, that's not what they need at all. That's the last thing that they need. If anything, it should be a white person saying, hey, I got a pen and a hat, a pen and a pad. What are your problems? And I will go down the list and check off which problems I can take care of within the next 48 hours. That's what we need, not someone coming to listen with ignorance. What would your response be?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. But you know, that's the only place that I could start. Part of finding courage as a white pastor begins someplace, and finding courage to write an article about, you know, my own history is a place to begin. Part of Empower West is acknowledging that I do have power to help. It's not power over or power under, but it's power with. I wish I could have a better answer to how I could help. And yes, you're exactly right. I could just be another white person trying to get a gold badge in the black community.
Interesting metaphor. We do pay attention to metaphors on the program. I, just from listening to what you said, obviously I don't know, you know, much of anything about this area of Louisville or what these folks are going through, but just from what you shared with us this evening, you said that the black pastors that are there, they meet on Mondays. They don't meet the same day as the white pastors because they are bivocational, meaning they have to work multiple jobs because they're churches cannot afford to pay them a full-time salary. That would seem to me at least one problem that you know. Why it seems to me, and this is what I mean where I say white people, I'm very suspicious because a lot of the times they are just simple, easy things that they could do right now to go about just solving problems. That's really all we need, just solve problems, solve problems, solve problems. Why couldn't it just be Reverend Whitaker says, hey, I'm going to take that on as my task. We are going to supplement their salary and make up the other half so that they can meet with everybody on Tuesday. They don't have to work two jobs. That's what we'll do. We'll work on seeing if we can do that with my congregation and maybe some of the other white churches. We can pair, and we're going to supplement their income so they don't have to do that. Doesn't that make logical sense?
Yeah, it does makes great sense. You know, another suggestion that I even offered at one of these meetings was why couldn't we share and why couldn't we help one another financially? You know, my church, even though it's not a large church, not very wealthy, it's still more wealthy than most of any other non-white church, you know. But there are plenty of reasons why we should stop being cowards and start stepping out like that.
Okay. I'm just going off logic then. So Is it logical then, because that seems like such an easy thing to do, is it logical then for me to suspect, hey, Reverend Whitaker, until proven otherwise, I'm going to just suspect and think that she is likely, probably practicing racism, white supremacy, because they seem like they're just really simple things that you could be doing, as opposed to just, I'm going to go and listen with ignorance to these poor people in East Louisville, Kentucky. Does that make logical sense?
I would say to a certain degree.
Okay. Where does it diverge, or where do you disagree?
I think yes, I do agree, but no. I think we have made things very complicated by rules and regulations that just create more boundaries for us to hide behind. And that's part of my own truth that I need to face up with. Okay,
well, proceeding, suspecting Reverend Whitaker could be, like many of the other white people who've done this, practicing racism. With this article on Carol Anderson's White Rage, you write, Carol Anderson writes a writhing read portraying the haunting truth of white power that continually stripped blacks of all human rights across American history. Anderson lays everything on the table with accurate, detailed facts spotlighting my own whiteness in ways I can no longer ignore. That last sentence, how did this book spotlight your own whiteness in ways I can no longer ignore? What do you mean there, and how did this book do that?
Well, I think it's my own apathy to it all. Apathy is such a killer. A killer of communities, a killer of people. Oftentimes, without my conscious awareness, I elevate my own humanity against others who in my own elevation, I dehumanize along the way. And that is something I can no longer ignore, because now it's staring me in the face.
Okay. I'm going to paraphrase it back to make sure I understood you correctly. You said that reading Carol Anderson's book, that it made you realize that, I guess, either consciously, subconsciously, you were valuing your white life more than non-white people's lives, that you were doing this, and this book made you aware of that. Is that accurate?
Yes, okay. I think that's accurate.
Okay. And that would be an act of white supremacy racism, yes?
Well, according to the definition you gave earlier.
Okay. Is that, and we agree that that definition was accurate, yes?
I just don't like that word dedicated, probably because it has more truth in it than I want it to have.
Interesting.
I'm just processing out loud, Gus.
I appreciate the honesty. Thank you kindly. Again, Carol Anderson's book, it sounds a lot like dedication, years and years and centuries of dedication described in that book. But anyway, with you valuing your white life over the lives of non, I mean, that seems like almost a no-brainer. Like, are we saying that that's not an act of racism, white supremacy?
Gosh, I think I need to go back to therapy. Perhaps it is.
Perhaps.
And that's the haunting image for me, Gus, is if I lived, back in, even 50 years ago when people, even 20 years ago, that the lynching you just mentioned, if I was in Jasper, Texas, would I just let that happen? And, I don't feel very brave when I think about that. I feel more like a coward.
I don't think we're using the correct word, because this started with the question was, so is that not an act of racism, valuing your white life over the lives of non-white people? Saying, hey, that's an act of racism, and not wanting to answer that truthfully, in my opinion, which could be another act of racism. And it moved from that to how would I respond in this lynching and all of that, which I said at the beginning, a lot of times white people in these discussions, they don't want to be honest. They don't want to reveal truth. And so they will pussyfoot and do a lot of diverting. And even when you got to the James Byrd, how would you respond to that? I would be a coward. That's not the correct, in my view, that's not the most accurate term. It's that is an act of racism. When white people, when they see non-white people being harmed all the time, when they value their own life over non-white people, these are acts of racism. We just don't call them that. We don't use the most accurate terms to describe what white people are doing to us, in my opinion. I could be wrong. If, you know, listener, if Gus is talking crazy, let me know. Or Reverend Whitaker, is what I'm saying, is it, am I being logical, or am I, you know, just talking crazy?
You know, I think there's logic there. Language is so powerful, and just the word racism and white supremacist, you know, to acknowledge that out loud in language from the deepest part of my heart is, as you said, is pussyfoot, you know? And yeah, it is.
I think, what do you think is holding you up from just, you know, acknowledging truth? Hey, I am a white woman, which you felt when reading Carol Anderson, and I practice racism, white supremacy. I value my white life over the lives of non-white people. What is the difficulty with acknowledging, if that's true, what's the difficulty with acknowledging that?
Because when you speak things aloud, they reveal and illuminate the truth of your heart. And that's the hardest part, Gus. That's the hardest part, is saying it out loud, because when it's a secret within your own heart, it's easier to deal with, you know? And I don't want to be like those other people. And according to truth that has been revealed even within these past 30 minutes, perhaps I am. Not perhaps, I am. I'm a racist.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I would agree there, just based on some of the things that I've heard. Again, truth, importance of getting truth. Continuing with, or actually even with that, I think it's very important, and particularly you, Reverend Whitaker, as a white woman, because I think a lot of times we talk about racism, even with Carol Anderson's book, I think it's great. As I said, I've referenced it. I quote her all the time in my writing. A lot of it is focused on the violence of white men. And I think a lot of times when we talk about this problem of white supremacy, we leave out white women, like our guest, Reverend Erica Evans Whitaker. Just can you speak to the role that white women like yourself have played, the integral role, in my view, that they have played in maintaining white supremacy racism?
Gosh, I wish I knew more about that, actually. One, I mean, it's hard in general, and I know we're not talking about women's rights or anything like that, but in a patriarchal society in which women were suppressed under men, even white women who still have power in the house, to say nothing, that in and of itself, I don't have enough knowledge about what that actually looked like, you know, but it goes back to power and it goes back to othering. Even though white women did not have the same power in society as white men, white women still had power over black men and black women and black children. So it's always about power. And power over, and who has more power than the other, as if there wasn't enough power to go around, as if there's a scarcity of power that we cannot share and empower one another.
White power, very important, which you did include in your writing. I do regularly in crime. I think that is a much more accurate phrase than white privilege, white power. Just based on your understanding, you are a white woman, have admitted to being racist. Do you think white people collectively that they value you all, because you are a white person, so you're included, do you think you white people collectively value white supremacy and maintaining white power? Do you think you all collectively value that more than justice?
I'm sorry, you cut out at the end, Gus.
Oh, okay. The question...
Do we collectively... Sorry, just say it one more time.
Yes, ma'am. Collectively, do you all value white supremacy more than justice?
Oh. Yes.
Grand. See, in my view, that is great. Just when folks have, and particularly non-white people, because I operate from the position that white people are not confused about this, that they just value white supremacy more than justice. If that's true, then we should just acknowledge that. That makes it much easier for us to address all of our problems, how we're going to make things better in Louisville and everything, just acknowledging that.
Gus, mm-hmm. I have a question for you.
Yes, ma'am.
What would be... I mean, you've already given me some great logical steps as, I mean, helping out black churches, black pastors, you know, who are in far worse situations than I am. But, you know, so even just watching the news as a white person, I know that I see different, you know, I mean, sitting next to some of the black people that I've had the privilege of getting to know and hearing their perspective, even just watching the news is so different that I can't even see it, you know?
Can't see what?
I can't. I mean, I've been able to see it more clearly here recently over the past year or so, but I can't see the difference sometimes between, I mean, of the injustices that are going on because I'm so blind to it.
Oh, okay. Well, I have a completely different viewpoint, as I stated earlier. And in fact, this is one of those I emphasize on the program regularly. I've written about this regularly. I staunchly reject that notion that white people are blind or they just don't understand racism, white supremacy. I take the position that white people, any white person, if they're 15 and up, and it might even be younger than that, there might be some white elementary school children who could, you know, put this thing down. People, the problem is not that they're blind or ignorant about racism. The problem is, or what the truth is that what you said, whites, individuals who classify themselves as white, they value white supremacy more than justice. So that's reflected in their behavior at all times. The problem that, in my view, that is a form of tremendous confusion. It portrays whites as ignorant or naive, or they can be redeemed, and that's just not the nature of the problem. The issue, the truth, as you stated, is that white people value white supremacy more than justice. So yeah, that's my response to that.
And I completely see that. So you don't believe that white people can be redeemed?
You just said white people, including yourself, collectively value white supremacy more than justice. I've seen no evidence that they're going to correct or change their set of values. I am going to switch here. This is one of the ways I tell people all the time, watch that ratio when white people, when they switch and start asking a lot of questions. So what is your assessment of 53% of white women, since you mentioned patriarchy, and that was a big talking point in the election, how do you make sense of 53% of white women voters choosing Donald Trump?
I don't make sense of it. I don't.
That would be another bit of evidence to me that would suggest that even white women, quote-unquote victims of patriarchy and sexism from white men, that even they value white supremacy more than justice or anything else. What are the demographics of your congregation in Louisville, Kentucky?
Yeah, so I have a white congregation, 99% white. They're mainly over the age of 65. Probably 60% of them are over 65. And there's, I don't know, about 150 on Sunday morning.
Wow, these are probably, I mean, and you can correct me. This will be put in the form of a question. If they're 60, you have a lot of members of your congregation are 65 and up, 90% white and up. Logic would tell me that you have probably a sizable, or it's likely that you have a few of the whites who made life very, very difficult for the late Muhammad Ali and his family. Is that likely true?
I mean, I don't know all of their origin stories, so maybe.
I'm just saying it could, if Muhammad Ali, being in Louisville, Kentucky, and experiencing a lot of well-documented white terrorism in a variety of forms, he and his family, if you're there and you have white people that are over 65, it could be that some of those folks are responsible for the terrorism that Muhammad Ali faced. Is that just following logic? Is that likely? Could be?
Yeah, I think according to some of those statistics, some of my people grew up on farms around Kentucky and in East Kentucky, and you know, Eastern Kentucky. So, I mean, that doesn't excuse any of that, but
I'm sure they voted for a sheriff or some political office or someone who was on the school board. I'm sure they did some voting that probably impacted the Clay family, Muhammad Ali. I'm sure that was likely the case. Do you think that's likely, following logic?
Yeah, I think it's likely.
Okay. With your congregation, do you all do anything? You said you all have, I think, about 150 members or so on Sunday. Do you all do anything as a congregation to address racism?
You know, we're beginning some of those conversations. So, no, I mean, not pussyfoot around it. No, we're currently not, other than the fact that we meet regularly with the Bhutanese community of refugees across the street, but nothing with the Black community, no.
Wow. Okay. What did they think of your article?
You know, some of them read it and thought it was compelling. And some of them joined me at the book read with Carol Anderson, which was great. Just a reminder, I've only been here since October, not that I'm throwing out any more excuses, but I haven't even been here 6 months yet.
Okay. Did you get any pushback? Anybody who was not pleased with your article or disagreed?
So not necessarily in the article, but we have been going through Baptist history over the past couple months, and that includes our own Baptist history with slavery in the 19th century. And you know, we talked about how Baptists, I mean, we're Baptists. We come out of the Southern Baptist Convention. Explicitly promoted slavery, and to pretend like that's not part of our history is, I mean, detrimental.
Interesting. Farrah Winfrey, she was a white woman, also admitted racist, white supremacist. She was a guest on our program, she's been a guest a number of times, but the first time that she was on the program, we talked about Christianity. She also classifies herself as a Christian. And she said that one of the worst crimes that whites, herself included, have committed is portraying worldwide Jesus as white. What do you think of her statement?
I think it's modern Christendom. It's true. Our Jesus is white. I mean, his hair looks better than mine. Blue eyes. He doesn't look Middle Eastern at all.
Oh, you said our, like, the, you all have a picture, depiction of Jesus in your congregation that's white?
There's a Jesus with a bunch of children painted on our children's wing. And, I mean, he's white.
Okay.
For sure.
Got it. Have you pointed that out to say, hey, this is a pretty massive act of white supremacy, and it's historically inaccurate to boot right here? Have you pointed that out to your congregation?
Oh, my gosh. No, I'm totally doing that this week, though. Seriously.
Are we being serious? Sounds like you could be being sarcastic with us. We do take
No, sorry. No, I really am, because even that in of itself sums up our conversation, the fact that I haven't pointed it out.
Oh, that's... other acts of racism. I would be interested to hear, you know, how that conversation goes, it's been my experience. I know Farrah Winfrey said the same thing, that that tends to be met with a lot of resistance. Apparently, a lot of folks are very vested in continuing to portray white Jesus, and that's the way that we should think about the Creator as white.
Because we want the Creator to be created in our image, not the other way around.
I would, again, just keep going back to that. That, in my view, again, shows, number one, not ignorant, because when it gets pointed out and you still are adhering to it, that to me is not ignorance. That is dedication to valuing white supremacy more than justice. Mm-hmm. That's just following logic. Also, Farrah Winfrey, when she was on the program, she said that racism, white supremacy, is a religion, and that what we have happening a lot of times is that it will look like the religion that's being practiced is Christianity or Islam or Baha'i or whatever it is, but what the religion that we're really adhering to is the religion of white supremacy. Do you think that's a true statement?
So does she say that about Christianity, about Western Christianity?
Yes, that often it will look like we're practicing Christianity, but that's not what it is. This is really the religion of white supremacy.
Yes. Christianity in Eastern countries is viewed not so much as a religious, but as a cultural identity. Yeah, yes.
Do you think that this is happening even in your congregation at Buchel down in Louisville, Kentucky?
Yeah, I think we've made that clear.
If folks have questions that they would like to ask Reverend Erica Evans Whitaker, feel free to chime in. If you have a question, the number to dial 641-715-3640, and the code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you have a question. Let's see, Thomas in New York. Did you have a question for Reverend Whitaker? You should be with us, Thomas in New York.
Have you heard?
Yes, sir.
Good evening, Gus. Good evening, Reverend Whitaker. I just wanted to commend the Reverend for admitting to being a racist, and I wanted to ask her a couple of questions. Do you think that Blacks, you called it earlier, you said earlier that you were never told by any Black people that you were a racist. You said that they were probably being kind. They wouldn't say it to your face. Do you think that maybe that it wasn't that they were being kind, that maybe they were afraid?
Yes, I do think that, Thomas.
Okay. I was very interested, as was Gus, when you mentioned your Black kids were being bused into your church at a young age. I never heard anything like that before myself. Well, first I want to ask you, do you think it's logical, you said it earlier, you worship the white Jesus because he's in the image of you. Do you think it's logical for Black people to worship a Jesus in the image of white people?
That's a really interesting question. My first response is yes, but I don't know, because I'm not Black. I don't know if that would be possible. Did that answer your question?
No, but I'll accept it. Anyway, when the Black kids were being bussed into your church, were these Black people singing in your church? And also, were they paying tithes in your church?
You know, I don't know. I was sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that was my question.
Okay. No, I don't know if they were or not. I don't remember seeing. Basically, what would happen, particularly in different churches that we were raised in, is our church bus would go out and pick up the neighborhood kids. That's what I mean by this. not like school education busing system, church busing, and pick up the kids who wanted to come to church, you know, or because we had breakfast and they didn't have breakfast. I don't know. But it was more of a look at, we can help you, you know, and we're going to feel good about ourselves by doing that.
Okay, and thank you guys for taking my questions. My very last question for you, and if Jesus Christ was alive today, do you think that he would also be a racist? And I'll mute my line.
No, I don't.
Appreciate that, Thomas in New York. The person that called, Emmy. Radiant Wednesday, I hope. Emmy, if you had a question for Reverend Whitaker, you should be with us.
Greetings. Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Awesome. Thank you. Greetings, everybody. My question for you, and you, my first question before you actually came out and admitted it, was if you viewed Black people as human, and then you pretty much said no, that you don't value our humanity or see us as human. Mm-hmm. My follow-up question would be, how did that process of not seeing Black people as human happen for you? And then you also answered my other question, which was, do you derive pleasure or a sense of satisfaction or just a sense of self by knowing or to yourself that Black people are not as valuable as you? And then I have follow-up questions to that, but I'll wait. Mm-hmm.
So let me just, which question did you want me to answer first?
It doesn't matter. Either one is fine. I'm paying attention.
Yeah, gosh, even that language of pleasure, you know, of dehumanizing Black people by trying to elevate my own humanity. Yeah, I'm not sure about the word pleasure, but there's obviously something that continues to happen, in which doesn't propel me forward to make more action towards that.
You're able to feel, you're white, so you're able to feel good about being white because I'm Black. How is it that that process occurred, that you derive that sense of self? Like, just how does that happen for you? And then I'll go ahead and ask this to you, so, because it's a follow-up to this, pretty much a similar thing, because I'm very fascinated by it, because what I've come to the conclusion is that white people are white because Black people are Black. So they're going to have Black people be Black, which means that they're going to always have to see us as non-human. You've already admitted that you feel good by so-called helping, but you're not really trying to help so that we can all just be equal and be done with this whole thing of racism and white supremacy. You just want to help because it makes you feel good because you're white. So you get to be lofty and white while I have to be Black and unhuman. How did that process occur for you? Also, the refugees that you're helping, where are they from?
Yeah, they're from the country of Bhutan.
How dark are they?
Yeah, so they're a caramel colored skin, depending on which part. They lived in a refugee camp in Nepal for years and years and years. So I'm not sure how much that influenced the coloring of their skin. So you asked a question about how I process my own whiteness by othering Blackness. I do that more consciously than I did when I was a child. Not to say that either one is working out for anybody, but at least I'm able, even painfully on this show, articulate and name it for myself. Yeah.
My last question will be then, do you think that white people will ever see black people as human?
Yes.
Because, you know, it's very hard for me to find any kind of sympathy with someone confessing that they're a racist. I think that when white people get together, they know that they're racist, which is why I'm wondering, like, what you all even talk about in church, just to be frank. Because as far as I understand, y'all are supposed to be talking about the goodness of, you know, being a so-called Christian, which is all this goodwill to everybody else, which we already know historically is inaccurate. But that means that you get together and you're white. So that means you have to know that you're white. And all these conversations have to occur because black people like myself are not present. So, you know, my question being, do you think that that is possible? I don't. And you said yes. Was that your answer?
Yes, I do.
Why? What makes you think that white people are going to do that? And that's my last question. Thank you.
The thing is, I don't know if white people will do that. And I don't know if that will happen in this lifetime, in the lifetime of our country. I don't know. But I have to believe it will happen.
Okay. Appreciate that, Emmy. The caller... 4443. Did you have a question for Reverend Whitaker?
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I have two quick questions. Reverend, you used a metaphor earlier on in the call, saying that lynchings were similar to gladiator spectacles, sort of like the arena or the circus. In ancient Rome, I was wondering, the gladiatorial spectacles were state-sponsored entertainment for, I guess, by people where, I guess, by people were being, like, fed to lions and whatnot. So is that what lynchings are? Is it, like, state-sponsored terrorism? Is it, like, entertainment for the white masses?
So... where I get this language is from Carol Anderson's book, because what she articulates is that, yes, lynching was state-sponsored in a sense that the state and government did nothing to stop it. And to me, that represents the Roman, the Greco-Roman world, where slaves were brought in and to watch die as entertainment before the masses.
Okay. My second question is, the people or the pastors that you meet at these meetings that you have in the, I guess, the west of Louisville or the east, I can't remember what you said.
The west.
Do you tell them, or do you tell them about the history of sort of like white pastors and in their involvement with white people, about, you know, missionaries? Do you talk about all the rape, all the terrorism that people like you have inflicted on black people and non-white people? And do you tell them that is most likely what it is that you're engaging in, that you're terrorizing them for your own sort of entertainment / gladiatorial spectacle?
No, I don't.
I don't know what is your goal or for coming on here, but I suspect it is to become a better practitioner of terrorizing non-white people. And it's very interesting. But thank you for coming on, and thank you for Gus for taking my question.
For sure, for sure. Retired firefighter in Florida, did you have a question for Reverend Whitaker, retired firefighter?
This is not retired firefighter.
Oh, man, my apologies. I'm sorry, 2648. Did you have a question?
Yes, I have a question. What do you think that integration was a good thing? If so, why?
I don't think it ended up being a good thing. I think it created so much harm because it was forced upon. And again, I wasn't alive during this time. And, I really have only heard stories and mainly from white people. And so I only have one perspective, but it doesn't seem like it worked well at all. And it's still playing out in our education system today.
Okay. Do you think that black and white people are in a war right now?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think that black people are deserving of reparations?
Yes.
Okay, that's all my questions, Gus. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Our caller in Michigan. Did you have a question for Reverend Whitaker? Caller in Michigan.
Good evening, Gus. May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Good evening. I dialed in late. I'm not sure. I missed a lot of the conversation, but I did want to ask the guest, who do you feel is most confused about racism, white supremacy, white people or non-white people, and why?
White people, because we can't even claim our own racism out loud in a radio interview. Well,
can you repeat that? I didn't understand your response to why.
I think white people are, one, because we can't even articulate our own racism. You know, that to me seems like a fundamental issue. Our own embedded racism.
Have you ever been confused about racism?
Yes.
Would you say you're confused now, or you don't have a lot of confusion? You kind of understand it better now, or?
I still think I'm confused, but I feel like I've had some good education right now.
So do you feel like you've been educated tonight, or like when did you start understanding racism, white supremacy, like more in your life, or are you just saying tonight?
So this was helpful dialogue for me tonight. When I studied film at the University of North Texas is when I started having a conversation about my own racism, particularly when I would study Western films. You know, Westerns are racist movies where the white people always power over and dehumanize the non-white people. That's when it started.
My last question is, who has educated you most about, are you learning more about racism from white people or non-white people? Like, who's educating you on this?
So currently I'm learning more from black people. If they continue to be patient with me, again, I do meet with a group of black pastors on Saturdays, and that's been, helpful for me, even if it's just one-sided right now.
Wow. Okay, well, I'm going to mute my line. Thank you for taking my call, Gus.
Grand hearing from you as usual. We had a person that wrote a question in. They wanted to know, Reverend Whitaker, can you explain what does it mean to be a white person in this environment society?
Well, I think being white most often comes with being part of the problem. Not that I can change my whiteness, but by me not helping solve the problem is just being part of the problem.
Okay. Hope that answered the person's question. I'm not sure if they knew or not, but the introduction clip, that was not Reverend Whitaker. The introduction
No.
clip that we started with, that was Carol Anderson talking about white rage, and Reverend Whitaker just wrote about Carol Anderson's book. That's why we're having her on the program. You already discussed, we talked about white rage. What other books have you read that, you know, really impacted your understanding of racism?
I've not read any other ones from Black authors, just to be completely honest.
Right on.
So I'm not sure if any of the white authors that I've been reading has been quite helpful.
I read white authors too. So, I mean, that talk about racism, I do that. We've had a lot of them on the program.
One of the books that I'm reading right now is Parker Palmer's Healing the Heart of Democracy. And that's been really helpful for me to, one, he's a white gentleman who comes out of, I think, a Quaker community, and talks about the racism breaking the heart of democracy. And so that's been helpful, just giving me some language to wrap my mind around.
Any other books that have, you know, really influenced how you have come to think about racism?
Nothing that comes to mind, Gus.
Okay.
Do you have any recommendations?
I encourage our listeners all the time to not help white people. As I've said, I've concluded that white people are not ignorant about racism, so I would just be aiding someone that I've concluded is dedicated to practicing racism. Why would I do that? Let's see, getting back to the church, because I did have other questions that I wanted to get through about that. Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, she was a guest on our program numerous times, general and child psychiatrist. On one of her last visits, she said that she talked about, and again, how the religion of white supremacy, sometimes it will look like Christianity, but it's really the religion of white supremacy. She talked about how racist white enslavers, they would use certain passages from the Bible to condition, to groom black people to be better slaves, to accept racism, white supremacy. And one of those things is that they would use certain passages to encourage black people to forgive white people. There was a lot of that talked about. It's almost mandatory anytime that someone brings up the massacre that happened at Mother Emanuel AME, that, oh, they forgave Dylan Roof, you know, hours after this horrible event, and, you know, some of the family members, they forgave him, and tearfully, and all that pain, still managed to forgive him. What is your response to the religion that you say you practice being used to condition black people to just further accept white terrorism?
I think it's opposite of what Jesus would have done.
Meaning,
you know, sometimes the church doesn't follow the way of Jesus Christ. And part of that is the white church forcing the black church or black people to forgive when that's not our place at all, amongst other things.
Do you think that is something that should be rejected, this idea of forgiving white people who have terrorized, practiced white supremacy against black people?
Yes, I just preached on the passage about loving your enemy and praying for those that persecute you last Sunday. And God, I don't have an answer for this question at all.
That would seem to be dangerous to preach such a sermon to black people in a system of white supremacy. Is that logical?
Yes.
Something to think about, I'm sure. Maybe even something to bring up with the board this coming Monday when you meet with the bivocational black ministers to see what thoughts they have about that.
But I was preaching to my white congregation, and gosh, that would be wrong of me to preach this to a black congregation. Just wrong.
Hmm. Can you think of a time when a white person or even a group of white people have practiced racism in your presence?
Every time we walk by the white Jesus in my children's wing, practicing racism.
Well, you'd already mentioned that. That certainly qualifies, but you had already mentioned that. Can you think of another one?
Oh, gosh.
There's one.
I'm sure there are hundreds. Gosh. Oh, I've already mentioned that one. Well, I mean, us not doing anything, you know? Right now is practicing it.
Hmm. Okay. Who did you vote for in the 2016 presidential election?
I voted for Hillary.
Voted for Hillary. Okay. Do you think Hillary Clinton is a racist?
Well, she is white.
So do you think?
So yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. This is important because this is based on something I'm about to write. Have you? It's kind of two questions together. So the first question: have you ever heard of any like television romances or like a romance novel between a Nazi and a Jew in a concentration camp? Have you ever heard of that being like the plot for a novel or a TV program or a movie or something?
Nope.
No. Okay. Have you ever heard of any sort of novel or television program where there is a romance between a white enslaver and an enslaved black person on a plantation?
Yes.
Why do you think the difference between those two?
Because one is propaganda for the current environment we live in.
Pretty direct. That's something I'm working on writing. They just they had a big to-do in the it was actually a lot of places, but the Washington Post, NPR, they were talking about how at Monticello, Thomas Jefferson's plantation, that they are, I guess they're renovating to be more inclusive of Sally Hemings, one of the enslaved black people, to be more inclusive of her experience and what life was like for some of the enslaved black people there. And they termed this a relationship between Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings, not rape. And that's something that we've talked about for years for the 8-year anniversary. We've talked about that for years, that this is rape every time and that's the way that it needs to be described, not a quote unquote relationship. Do you have respond? Do you is that logical? Classifying?
That is logical. I completely agree.
Right on. When you said Carol Anderson, so she came in town. You actually got to meet her. You wrote this piece, and she did the discussion. Did you get any time to talk with her after or before?
I didn't have any time to talk with her.
Okay.
She was around, more important than me.
Got it. What, anything substantial that she said at that meeting that stuck with you?
Yeah, she had this line. Dr. Kevin Cosby is a black pastor here in town who's the pastor at St. Stephen's. He was the one interviewing her a Q&A time, you know, at this church. And he said something, he asked her a question about, well, why, like, how can we not be upset at those white people who aren't willing to, I mean, journey with us all the way to, really redemption. And she had this line about, you know, we just have to acknowledge that some people cannot journey with us all the way. Some people only can take us to Atlanta, although we're not trying to get to Atlanta. And she's not talking about white people. She's talking about black people. And I thought that was just really interesting. And I haven't been able to really understand that well.
Interesting. Interesting. In my view, it would be more accurate to just again state that white people, including Reverend Erica Evans Whitaker, white people value white supremacy more than just. That's what I mean. To me, that sounds like it could have been some pussyfooting if we're not just saying that, hey, white people collectively, they value white supremacy over justice. They are not interested in redemption or whatever it is. They're interested in maintaining white power. Thomas in New York, he wrote in just a quick follow-up question. He said, Reverend Whitaker, do you think it would help the black people you encounter or engage with to inform them that you are a racist from this point on?
Maybe. Is he asking for their benefit or for my benefit?
For their benefit.
I don't know. I don't know if that would be helpful.
Why would it not be helpful? How would that possibly not be beneficial for these black people to know that you are a racist?
Well, I figured they probably already assume that.
They do have that saying about assumptions. Is it any way that it would be harmful for them to know that you are a racist? Is it any way that that information would harm them knowing that?
Perhaps not. I don't know.
Can you think of any way that that information would harm them?
I mean, it would definitely shorten the conversation.
Okay, but I don't know how that would be harmful to them. Can you think of any way that would be harmful to them? Them knowing that you are a racist?
Yeah, you know, I can't at this moment.
Okay. So, at least in my mind, if we can't think of any way that it would be harmful, we would have to go back to, would this be helpful? Would this be beneficial, I think is the word he used, for black people and maybe non-white people on the whole to know that you are racist moving forward in, you know, future dealings with you?
Yeah, I can't think of any ways that that would be helpful either.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting. The person that dialed in, I guess you're on the vote line. Did you have a question for Reverend Whitaker, person on the vote line?
Hello, can you hear me?
You're a little muffled. It doesn't sound clear.
Is this a little better?
Try one more time. Maybe give us two sentences. Let's see.
Hi, is this better?
Okay, let's go. We can hear you.
Okay, I wanted to ask the pastor, how do the white congregants relate to the Bhutanese folks that are there at her church?
So the white congregants that interact with the Bhutanese, so yesterday's a good example. Me and a couple other women went to over to one of the family's apartments and sat and had tea and shared some fruit and some dumplings with their children and had conversation. And that's really one of the main interactions. We also have a community garden at our church that we share with the Bhutanese family. Families, they can come and grow their own fruits and vegetables in their own plot of land. Right next to their apartment complex.
Okay, and thank you. And I wanted to ask, in your household when you were growing up, what did your parents talk about racism?
No, never.
Okay, thank you.
For sure. The person that called from a blocked number, did you have a question for Reverend Whitaker? You should be with us.
Yes, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, sorry, I'm on the plantation right now. I have a few quick questions. Hopefully they'll be answered concisely. Greetings to everyone on the line, by the way. First question, you were in response to the answer you gave for the caller in Michigan who asked who was less confused or who was more confused about racism. You said you do agree that we exist in a system of racism and white supremacy, mainly white supremacy being the key word. Who created that system?
White people.
Okay. And who currently is upholding that system?
White people.
How then are they the most confused about the system that they both created and uphold to this day?
That's the very problem.
What is the very problem?
The fact that we don't know.
You know, and quite a few other white people who have been on this program admit to knowing that they created white supremacy and they are currently upholding white supremacy. They like to say they're benefiting from it, but it's the same thing. So how then are you confused about that?
I'm not trying to be antagonistic at all.
I'm not trying to be antagonistic at all. I'm really seeking clarity because that confuses me. And as a victim of racism and white supremacy, I believe it's more so the job of white people to educate non-white people about white supremacy versus non-white people educating white people about white supremacy. So I'm asking in earnestly, how are white people confused, the most confused, about the system that they created, are upholding, and they like to say benefit from?
Because at the end of the day, white people aren't ready to let go of that. That's why there's confusion.
So then, is it basically going to continue until you all are ready to let go of white supremacy?
I don't know.
Okay. And then one more question kind of going in step with what Thomas had just wrote in and asked. You said that you don't think that that would be beneficial for you to tell non-white people that you are a racist. I would like to say that, yes, it is very beneficial. We do not know who is racist and who is not racist, and we do not even know what that means. So if you could, this is a compensatory request, if you could please explain to every non-white person that you come in contact with, especially those that you say you meet with every week, that you are a racist and that they should be suspicious of you and your actions at all times in encountering with you. Because we don't know what's going on. Non-white people do not know what's going on right now. And white people are very clear about it. And they prove that on a day-to-day basis. So that's it. Sorry for speechifying a little bit, but thank you for coming on the program, and I'll meet my line.
Thank you.
For sure. That was definitely a little bit of speechifying. Emmy, did you have a last question for Reverend Whitaker?
I did. Thank you so much for taking the call. I was hoping that you would. You would agree that this conversation that you've had with Gus has been constructive, yes?
Yes.
And you would agree that we've been respectful and patient with you and being honest with you about our thoughts and asking you genuine questions, yes?
Yes.
So then my request is that you share this very show that you're on, and I think other people have alluded to this too, but they acted before I could, particularly with the Black pastors that you meet and that, you know, that you have in contact, or that group that's trying to do things for the Black community in the area that you're in, that you share this show with them. Like, when it becomes available, which you usually post it, like, the next day it will post up, that you share the link with them and encourage them to listen to it. Is that something that you can do?
I will definitely consider that.
Will you do it? Not consider it. Will you do it?
I haven't decided whether or not I'm going to.
Is there a reason that you would not share this show with the Black pastors and the people trying to help Black people in your area?
Yeah, I think right now my pride is getting in the way.
You do understand that that's an act of racism, yes?
I think y'all made that clear.
Well, I'm saying if you don't want to, it's only your actions that will make a difference. And one way is to not be racist and to share the show. But that's all I have. Thank you.
Hey, Gus, I have 2 more minutes and then I have to go.
Oh, man. All right. When you said your pride would maybe prevent you from sharing the program, is it pride that these black people don't think of you as a racist and that would change if you shared this program or something else?
You know, I'm not sure yet, actually. I need to sit and process some of the things that I'm hearing for the first time on this show that I haven't processed ever before.
Do you think that a primary motivating factor with regards to why the global white minority, yourself being one, do you think one of the primary motivating factors for white people collectively practicing white supremacy racism is them being tremendously outnumbered by non-white people on the planet?
Can you say that one more time, Gus?
Yes, ma'am. Do you think one of the primary motivating factors with regards to why white people like yourself practice white supremacy racism is because white people are tremendously outnumbered on the planet by non-white people? I think white people are maybe 10% of the population in comparison to 90% non-white.
Yes, I do think it's part of that.
I guess in the last 30 seconds, making sure we didn't miss a caller. Did I get in all of the major questions? One, I'm surprised no one referenced. We do reference Area 8 sexual activity at all times. Very important one, yes, no. Have you ever at any point engaged in sexual activity with a non-white person?
No.
Okay. Do you have a plan to solve the problem of racism before 2025?
No, I don't.
Okay. I will assume folks are good. I didn't see any other emails or what have you while we were rolling. With that, again, folks can check the article. It's linked in the description. The title, again, is Racism Rooted in Our Country's DNA. You can check out the report. You can also see a photograph if you want to see Reverend Whitaker. Fascinating exchange. Really appreciated the dialogue. Hopefully you will share this audio with some of the pastors. If you all are listening, I would say, number one, keep in mind Reverend Whitaker admitted racist. Number two, just keep pestering to get them to get your salary so that you do not have to be bivocational anymore. You can let that other job go and just focus on your ministry and other things you would like to do to help black people in Louisville. That would be my suggestion. Let's just get that salary taken care of. But thank you kindly, Reverend Whitaker. Grand exchange. And hopefully we'll have you back on the program to continue the discussion.
Peace to you. Thanks, Gus.
Mm-hmm. Context of white supremacy. Again, our guest, Reverend Erica Evans Whitaker, joining us from Kentucky. Fascinating. Folks have any comments they want to get in based on what they heard before we wrap things up? We'll make time for that as well. I'll try to think if we'll do a commercial, if we'll just make time for folks to share. I think we'll just make time for folks to share. Number one, it was great having Dr. Kanban on the program yesterday. I think some people missed his live visit, but it is in the archives. The archives are updated at SoundCloud. I think I shared this yesterday. So you have way more options now in year 8 to access the cows. We're at iTunes. We are on SoundCloud. We are on Google Play. We are on Black Talk Radio Network and more outlets than that. But it should be super easy. All of those outlets are current. As of, I think the only thing they won't have is this program. And within, you know, a few minutes of this program ending, it should be available at SoundCloud, and it'll be available at Black Talk Radio Network. And if you give it maybe a few hours, it'll be available at iTunes. But there are many outlets where you can get the program now. Shouldn't be any problems with folks being up to date with what we have broadcast. That being said, Dr. Kanban, was great having him on the program yesterday. He always appreciates feedback. So if you have questions, if he shared something that didn't make sense, or if he, you know, added insight that you really needed to help your understanding of racism, white supremacy, he always enjoys feedback. You can let us know. You can leave comments. You can I guess even email me, or you could email him as well. I'm sure he would really appreciate that because he always asks for feedback when he comes on the cows, and I suspect he does that other programs as well, so that way he knows if he needs to improve something or make some changes, make some updates. So Dr. Cambon would appreciate. Two other quick things that I'll get to before we get to folks who dialed in. I've got to do the book list. For that's one thing. I mean, it's nothing to celebrate. It's nothing to rejoice about under the system of racism, white supremacy. It is, you know, on the grind until we solve this problem. But we did do 8 years. That is one thing. I'm very pleased with our accomplishment with the book club. I will have that for this Saturday. I made the list. I think I just forgot like two or three books. I tried to see if I could do it from memory, and I forgot like two or three of the books that we covered. So I want to have our full book club list. That is something, again, if you just read, have people that ask about, you know, Gus, can you suggest books for us to read? The book club. Just look at what we've done on the book club. That's the book list. Look at the book club. If you read even half of those books, I guarantee you will drastically improve your understanding of white supremacy racism, what it means to be white. Guarantee. You don't have to listen to all the book club archives. You can just read any, pick out any random assortment of the books that we've covered. You will benefit. Two things I wanted to get to, and some of it even alludes to what we discussed this evening with Reverend Whitaker, who again was suggested, Mr. Fox, who puts YouTube as well. He has been on the grind and uploaded a hefty chunk of our content to YouTube, so lots of ways you can access. But Mr. Fox recommended our guest for tonight. When she says white people are ignorant about racism, just little things reveal that that is a lie, that you cannot be white and be ignorant about racism. The Office. I think that was a show, our caller down in Georgia who dialed in, who's asking questions about, you know, who is more confused about racism, not the caller in Michigan, the female caller who did the follow-up questions. The Office. We've talked about that show on this program before. In fact, I learned about The Office. I started watching it because one of our guests who was on the program, Justice, asked him about racist jokes. And he mentioned The Office as an example of racist jokes. So I started watching The Office, and there are a lot of racist jokes there. In fact, there's so many. I would say that the structure of the show, The Office, which was on for a decade, if you don't understand racism, you will miss a lot of those jokes. I've talked about this before on the program. I mean, it's every show. It's the structure of the program. But there is a show specifically where the white guy, he's the manager, and this, it's a paper office. He's fussing at all of their sales staff. He's fussing at them and saying that they have gotten really obnoxious and arrogant because they've got all these bonuses, so they're making a lot more money, and so they're kind of lording it over everyone else in the office. And all of the sales staff is white except for one guy. He's black. His name is Stanley. So the white manager is going around to fuss at all of them for their bad attitude. And so he's like, you arrogant this and, you know, snobbish this and blah, blah, blah. And so he gets to the guy at the end, the black guy, Stanley. He gets to the guy at the end and he says, you all have been so uppity. And he's looking at him. And so everybody's looking like, did he just call this black guy uppity? And so then it's like he realizes like, oh, I just called the black person uppity. So then he goes back and says, you uppity Jim, which is the name of the white guy next to him. And so everybody's looking like, wait a minute, you just were looking at him, the black guy, and calling him uppity. But it's like he realized what he did. And so then he tries to make it seem like he was calling the white guy, Jim, uppity. And everybody, I mean, the only way that you get the humor of that joke is if you understand racism. And it's tons of jokes like that in The Office where they're just making racist joke, racist joke, racist joke. And this was a very it was on for a decade. This is a very popular show with white people. They're, either you're telling me that white people are just regularly missing major elements of humor in a show that was on a decade, or white people just lie a lot and they are very, very, very informed about white supremacy. They are the experts. Next, sticking with television. We talked about The Walking Dead. Tariq Nasheed was on. We did a whole program talking about it. I've done videos on it. Racism, white supremacy is embedded in everything. No big deal. I just saw today they had, I guess, some sort of controversy because they had T-shirts that had eeny, meeny, miny, moe with the famed baseball bat from season 7 of The Walking Dead. If people have been following this, it's a zombie show. You don't need to watch it. It's been on for 7 years. You do not need to watch it. You do not need to watch it. I'm not advertising for it at all. They use a baseball bat to kill people and main characters just to beat people's brains out. All this gory white violence. The controversy was that previously, in like the early 20th century, one of the racist nursery rhymes was "Eeny, meeny, miny, moe, catch a nigger by his toe." And so people were like, hey, this is a racist shirt. It's promoting racism against black people and blah, blah, blah. So they took the shirt down. It reminded me that whole scene is racialized. I think I forgot to say this, one, because that whole, the scene that I'm talking about where Negan's character is introduced, where he has this baseball bat wrapped in barbed wire and uses it to beat people's brain, to literally bash people's brains out. That scene is racialized in the comic book. It is not racialized in the television show. This was the big season 7 premiere, episode 1 of season 7. It got huge, millions of people tuned in to watch people get their brains bashed in. But that scene is not racialized in the TV show. That scene was racialized in the comic book. And when I say racialized, I mean Negan, when he does his eeny, meeny, miny, moe, trying to pick out who he's going to kill, he says, eeny, meeny, miny, moe, and he stops in front of the black person. I think it's Michonne. And he says, no, I can't kill the black person. That would just be racist. No, I can't kill her. So he keeps going down the line. And he does the same thing when he gets to Glenn, who is a non-white person, quote-unquote Asian. He does the same thing when he gets to him. And it plays out that way. The only reason I know this is because people had said that the comic book is way more racist than the television show. So I looked, and it is. Michonne, the black female, she gets raped in the comic book. They have this scene. I've heard that repeatedly, that a lot of times if they're movies or TV shows that have racism in it, if they're based on a book, the book will be way more unfiltered with the racism. I've seen that pattern play out. I think True Blood is even like that. But the comic book is like years ahead of the television show. I mean, literally years ahead. Seasons, if you want to, you know, find out what's going to happen in season two or three seasons down the road, you can just read the comic and see what's going to happen. I forgot about it. I think I had mentioned it before, and I just forgot about it. And then this became a big deal with the T-shirt in season 7. And it was, oh, yeah, that scene is racist to begin with in the comic book. It started from something. And there are many more instances. This is a series where they, you know, are calling black people nigger this. And all. I mean, the racism is everywhere. Walking Dead, you can just pick random television shows. The racism will be there. But I at least did want to get that in. With that, if folks have commentary about Reverend Erica Evans Whitaker, feel free. Admitted racist. I'm going to make sure I go back and change the description to make sure that it accurately reflects that she admitted to being a racist. I guess the only comment that I will make is that it seemed, and this is a pattern that we have observed, at least I have observed over the 8 years we've done The Cows, a lot of times these white people, particularly if they write anything mildly somewhat truthful about racism, they will expect lots and lots of kudos. I don't know how she's received by the black people in Louisville, East Louisville. I suspect that, you know, it's probably adulation and appreciation for her coming to hang out with them. I could be wrong, but that tends to be what happens when they come on this broadcast or when they encounter other black people who do not give them that, who treat them with appropriate, logical suspicion that they are racist, or at minimum, I'm going to function with you like you're a racist. And I'm asking you questions with suspicion, and I'm not all giggles and hugs and yeah, you're great and everything. Their demeanor can change. I mean, you can feel it. Start off from, oh, yes, more niggers that will love on me. Wait a minute. Who? I don't know. You know, I've had about my fill of these niggers. You can just kind of see the demeanor change as things go. It doesn't matter if it's contentious or not. You can see it. You can feel it almost depending on how sensitive you are. I felt that from the broadcast this evening. I will hush there. If there are folks who have comments they want to share, one Reverend Whitaker, line should be open. Let's see. All the folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you had commentary on what you heard from Reverend Whitaker, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings to you, Gus. Greetings to all the callers and the listeners. I missed about the first hour of the show, which I'm disappointed. I was doing something else that was counter-racist. So it wasn't wasted time at all, but I really wanted to hear this from the beginning. I saw her picture, and man, all I could think of is she has the quintessential look of the type of white person who, if she gave a black person seeking white validation, any validation, that they would just think she walked on water. Like, it was like, I just looked at her face. I was like, wow, she must really have. When she said that she's in the Louisville area, is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah, I could just see those black people just going bonkers if she came to their church or spent time with them. So I hope she does follow through and let people know, which I don't think she will because she's a racist. Let them know that she's a racist. Let them hear the program so they can hear her say so in her own words. And just hear the gist of the conversation, because I think it will be very helpful. I found it really fascinating. And also, I just had to say thank you so much for having Dr. Cambron, and happy anniversary, Gus. But I just, that brother, I just don't have enough words for him, his work, his work ethic, his African warrior-ness. I mean, he's just a shining example for what black men should aspire to be and do to counter this system. So I greatly appreciate any and every time you have him on the show. His daughter is just incredible. It's great to even hear her speak. He has a wonderful family, obviously. So thank you for that. But, just to get back to Reverend Whitaker, I found it so fascinating when she said she needed to basically process her experience on this show, because it just made me think, when white people, just what you kind of alluded to not too long ago, when white people encounter black people who behave with them properly, with an understanding that they are at war with us, we are prisoners of war, white people are racist, and that they practice racism in the most refined ways, and those black people exhibit some semblance of being less confused, I think it completely throws their brain computer into warp status where they just don't know how to function. And usually the response, like you said, the whole conversation will shift. The vibration that they emanate will shift. The way that they speak and even answer questions, if they choose to answer questions, will shift. I've seen that with Jane Elliott. They'll start cursing at you or just go in a whole other direction. The reason I think she didn't do so is because she's a reverend, of course. And that doesn't mean anything to white people. If she really wanted to curse at you, she would have done it anyway. But I just think that's part of her rhetorical ethics there. And I just found that fascinating. And then also there was something else that she had said. When she said, when one of the callers, I think it was one of the black female callers, was asking her, I think it might have been Emma, thank you for asking, for her to tell other black people, the black people she deals with, that she is racist and things of that nature. And she said, I will consider it. And then she had the nerve to say that it was her pride. No, it was you practicing racism, you being a white female, F-E-E-M-A-L-E. You are being a racist. And that's pretty much what it is. And you obfuscate, thank you, Gus, for that term, obfuscate the reality of the fact that you as a white woman are practicing racism. And you as a white woman are the origin of racism, white supremacy. You birth these people and you teach them from the womb how to function with black people. So thank you for the show. I can't wait to hear the first hour and change that I missed. And I'll mute my line. Thank you.
Appreciate that, Roz. Did other folks that are with us, did you all have commentary, what you heard from Reverend Whitaker? Admitted racist.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, great, great show, Gus. Always love to have white people. And they never seem to disappoint. She wasn't quite as refined as some of your previous guests. I think that, like you just said, and you called it, she was calling and expecting to get praised. And when it started going the other way, I think she kind of started changing up. You know, her answers started getting very short. I think that each person she was waiting for the one to call in and take her side. And I think she kind of realized that that wasn't going to happen. I just feel like it's just very telling. I wish that she would send this episode to the pastors. In fact, man, maybe we should do some research and try to get them a copy of these episodes so they know exactly what they're dealing with. I think that a huge part of the problem is that white people practice deception, and black people are under the assumption that all white people are not racist. And the more white people that will come out and just say, hey, listen, I'm a racist, and we know that from the start, it would just make a dramatic change in the way we would deal with them. And I just think that would be a huge part of the solution. Of course, if we just look at them all as being racist, that would just end that problem. But I just felt like it was just a very telling episode. So many parts that, you know, she was just very revealing that she's a racist. And, you know, I don't have too much more to add. I thank you for having Dr. Cambon on. I was in travel, so I didn't want to get into any, you know, real questions. But one part he mentioned yesterday that is very telling. And, you know, Raj just said obfuscation. I call this black obfuscation or white obfuscation, is that when black people come up with every other reason why something is wrong other than the fact that all white people are being practicing racism, they will fight that as the reason why things is the way they are to the T, and instead of just, you know, just admitting to the fact that we're in a system of racism, we're victims of racism, they will fight that and obfuscate from that point and come up with some other wild out, outlandish thing that has really nothing to do with what the problem is. Definitely a big part when he mentioned that yesterday. And I mute my line. Thank you.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
I appreciate this. I was actually really happy that I caught this one, because I've been missing some as of late. But I thought it was very fascinating. Like, that's why I really just had to ask her, because the very specific question of her sharing it with the black people she's so-called trying to help. And I wasn't saying for her to share the show so that the black people that she's so-called helping will know that she's a racist. I think that the show was constructive all around and highlighting a lot of things that black pastors and pastors of black churches could take, not to mention just being put on to the cows, and who knows what they could find that would help the people that they're helping. So it wasn't even so much about her telling the black people that she's around that she's a racist, although that would happen, because that, you know, that does happen throughout the show, but that wasn't my initial thing. And she couldn't even do that. And I was so fascinated because, you know, I already know it won't happen. Logic says that it won't happen. If it happened, it would be great, because, you know, I would love racism, white supremacy to just be over. Like, I want in my lifetime, before I have kids, so that I could have kids. Like, I don't find any pleasure in this at all. So, you know, if she had been able to do that, that would have been fantastic. But how could you come on the show, have the realization, or admit the realization, or just admit that you're a racist, which most of us are already suspecting, like all of us are suspecting you anyway, you know what I mean? Then you do that, okay, good for you. That was more for you, for her admitting that she was a racist, than it really was for me, or I feel like for a lot of other non-white people who might listen to the show. Often it's like, okay, next, like we already knew that, you know what I mean? We could glean that from the way that you're answering questions, what you're saying and what you're not saying. But to be like, and it goes back to what Gus is always asking, are you really pained? You can't be pained. It's impossible for white people to be pained the way that we are. Like, sometimes I just sit with it and I'm overwhelmed by the reality that the world over does not see me as human or as human as they are. And it's just like, what, you know? And so if you feel that as a white person, like even just a little bit, or you admitted it, you know what I mean? That your white life is more important than mine, which is even removed. Like, it's not even that your life is worth more than mine. It's just that you get to be human and all the things that come along with being human. And I am just the middle link or whatever it is. You couldn't even gather the Christianity in you. You're a pastor. I mean, you went to school, you have a degree, like, what's up? You know what I'm saying? And you can't even share this with the black pastors. So that in and of itself, if they're what, like, what I'm saying, to get to the point, is they won't replace the system of racism or the system of justice. If they won't even make such a small gesture as to be okay with what we already knew they were, but sharing something. That's why I asked her, was this constructive? We've been respectful. And I have to say, I'm very grateful to be a part of a community or to be with Black people who are very respectful when we go about this. You know, it's not just trashing white people. Like, you can't even say that, you know? And I bet you if we had been like that, she would have been eager to share it with the Black pastors. You know what I mean? So that it's like, but here we are, composed, intelligent, articulate, calm, patient, everything, just having this conversation with her. And you can't even share it with the Black people you so-called help. So no, they're not going to. They can't. It's not like it's not in them at all. And so I was just like really grateful for this conversation because she allowed it to happen that way with her pseudo vulnerability. I'm so grateful. The only thing I wanted to thank her for, if I thanked her for anything, was not crying. And that's it. Thank you.
White people can show you better than I can tell you. Thank you, Emmy. Anybody else have commentary they wanted to share about Reverend Whitaker? Any other commentary for Reverend Whitaker?
And even though she knew it was racist, she still was cool with it. I'm sorry, I didn't get to say that. I said, you understand it's racist. She said, yes. There you go. Like, no, they're not going to do anything about it. They don't care. It's not important to them. That's it.
Folks satisfied? Anything else on Reverend Whitaker? Thought it was significant that she said she had been pained by the discussion this evening, not by racism, but pained by just being questioned with suspicion by victims of racism. I thought that was most revealing when we talk about white people being pained because racism is being practiced and they feel bad about what's happening to niggers. That is, you know, folly, tremendous folly, master deceivers. We will be here tomorrow for Workplace Racism, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We'll be looking forward. Folks have been writing in. If you have commentary you want to write in, untiljustice@gmail.com. If you have anything you want to write in for Workplace Racism, Friday, Delectable Negro, a new book on cannibalism just came out this week. I was absolutely stunned. Our timing for 8 years has been absolutely impeccable. Here on the Cows, I did that. I wrote down a list of things. I'm going to get that book on cannibalism as well. But I wrote down a list of things that have happened live while we were on the air over the last 8 years, and it was rather telling. Let me see if I can pull it up within the next 30 seconds. I think I made a list of it. Oh, I did. I will read my list in a second. So let me get the book that came out on cannibalism first. I think someone had posted this, and then I saw that this was like a whole... There was a whole book and interviews, and the whole lecture circuit was attached to this. It's not just the book. It's further down than I thought. It might take me a little while to pull it up. You'll have to there it is right there. It was right in front of my face. Okay, so the book, Dr. Bill Schutt, S-C-H-U-T-T, Dr. Bill Schutt. He is a vertebrate zoologist and researcher at the American Museum of Natural History. His new book is Cannibalism, A Perfectly Natural History. That's the name of it. And they describe this practice as being widespread and might be linked to the extinction of Neanderthals. That's his new book for the people that are reading The Delectable Negro with us. Session 5 is Friday at 8 p.m. This might be a great companion book, but it's Dr. Bill Schutt, S-C-H-U-T-T, and the book is Cannibalism, A Perfectly natural history. Delectable Negro is this Friday. I am sure we will hear at least a little bit from one of his interviews as we continue with the book Delectable Negro. The quick list, these are things that happened live on the air over the past 8 years that the Cows has been broadcasting. Michael Jackson's funeral, I think Noel Ignatieff, we were doing that program while that was happening. Justice Sotomayor was confirmed. Frank Wu was on the program. Trayvon Martin's killer was acquitted. We were doing the Saturday compensatory call-in when the verdict was announced. No indictment for Michael Brown's killer. We were with the documentary filmmakers Whitelandia about the history of white supremacy in Oregon when it was announced. That just talked about it. The 2016 Dallas police officers were shot and killed. We were live on the air with Thursday Workplace Racism when that happened, and we were almost live on the air when the shooting of the Baton Rouge police officers happened. We were just about to go live with the Global Sunday Talk on Racism, and President Barack Obama was reelected. It was officially announced while we were live on the air. And how could I forget President Trump? We were live on the air when President Trump was confirmed as the winner of the 2016 election. So we have had pretty impeccable timing, and it remains with the book on cannibalism coming out while we are in the middle of The Delectable Negro. Saturday compensatory call in normal time, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Do folks have other comments that they wanted to get in? Anything relevant you wanted to share related to racism, white supremacy, or are people satisfied for the day?
I just want to say, man, the way you word your definition and the fact that so many white people have a problem with dedication, and then they come on and prove just how dedicated white people are practicing racism by the way they, you know, perform in their interview. It's just amazing how that word throws everyone off. Well, I think more than any other part of that definition, that one they just can't seem to come to grips with. And those are generally the people that are the most dedicated, I think.
White people can show you better than I can tell you, for sure.
Can I be heard?
Yes, Roz, we can hear you. I just want to check with our female caller in New York really quick. I don't think she's got to share at all. Ma'am, did you have commentary?
Yes, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, good evening, Gus, and to the callers. Another intriguing show with another intriguing white woman. I just wanted to mention regarding the book that you just mentioned about the cannibalism and the extension of the Neanderthals. Well, I just wanted to mention that I've been following the Delectable Negro and listening to the archives, and I've always wanted to call in, but I'm constantly on the plantation in my home on the plantation, and I'm unable to chime in. But Dr. Oh my gosh, why is his name escaping me? Oh, he spoke about cannibalism, Dr. C. Smalls, who was in Hidden Colors, and the one that he presided over Dr. Welsing's homegoing ceremony. Excellent scholar. He has a video on YouTube where he's being interviewed by a gentleman by the name of Saw Netter, of Saw Netter Studios, where he speaks about the caves in France and how those caves, he's been to those caves in France where there are bones, and on those bones of those people that were in the cave, these white people in these caves, there are teeth marks and there are bite marks on them. They have since sealed these caves up, and he said one of the things that hit you is the smell, because they were in there with animals. And they were in there, and they were eating each other. They would start with eating the women first. The men would eat the women because the climate was such a horrible, it was so cold that they had to retreat to those caves to be able to stay alive. And that's where a lot of that homosexuality came into play also. So you had this bestiality going on, you had homosexuality, and you had cannibalism. And it's all evidenced in those caves. And those historians, those European historians, have sealed those caves up. But Dr. Smalls was fortunate enough to be able to visit those caves before they did. So there's evidence that of what's in that book, and I'm sure that maybe that is also chronicled in that book that you just mentioned, Gus. So I just wanted to mention that if anybody could go on YouTube and find one of those videos where Dr. Smalls is breaking down the history of I think it's of religion in amongst African people, and he does mention those caves in there and what's actually in those caves in Europe. So I just wanted to mention that, and that's all I had. Thank you for taking my call. I'll mute my line.
Appreciate that. I'll see if folks can, if I can track down the video, I'll share it on our Facebook page if I can locate it. Roz, were you going to comment as well, sir? Thank you for being patient.
Well, no problem. Thank you. Yes, the person that the sister was speaking about was Jane Smalls. She's actually a brother that taught me when I was younger. Yeah, she's brilliant. And, actually, from what I understand, too, they have, like, markings on the bones. They're able to use hand tools, like stone hand tools, to break the bones open to get at the marrow. So, I mean, like, they really got it in with the cannibalism in Europe. And, of course, you have Mummies, Cannibals, and Vampires, which documents the entire history of that in Europe. So that's another good book to read, too. Maybe we should read that on the cast at some point in the future. But I just had to say, when you gave the title for that book, I copped it immediately. I was like, oh, cannibalism? White people? Oh, I need to get this. So I got it, like, right after you read the title. And what I wanted to bring up was earlier today, I don't know, you've probably seen it, Gus, because you're so ahead of the curve in most of the cases. They had an article released on Dylann Roof today. And in the report, they found that he was planning to go to multiple churches that night and shoot up people. And it just so happened that everything developed in a way in which he only shot up Mother Emanuel Church. But actually, they said he had plotted to go to multiple churches. So imagine if he had gone to like four or five different churches and just shot up black people. This would be a much larger, wider scoping, wider reaching incident than we could ever think of. And then you have the other guy who's giving praises to him for earlier this week, the fat white guy, I'm forgetting his name, who wanted to do the same thing. And he was planning to go to multiple churches to kill as many black people as possible. So this whole situation with Dylann Roof was actually meant to be a lot bigger than what we're conceiving of. And I wonder how many other racist incidences like this were planned to be on a much larger scale than what we're being told. And I think that that's also obfuscated and also diminished in order to create confusion so that black people don't think that white people are as diabolical as they actually are. So that is something I wanted to throw out there. I don't know if you saw that article, but I wanted to make sure that everyone was aware of it. If you don't have it, I'll dig it up and I'll shoot it to you in email.
I definitely appreciate it. I don't know if I was ahead of the curve, but I do know, number one, it definitely bears being stated, because I think a lot of people kind of didn't keep track, haven't kept up with what's happened with the Dylann Roof white terrorist since the shooting back in 2015. They just kind of let it go and maybe paid attention a little bit when the trial happened last year and just haven't really kept up with things. But when I saw that, I thank you, Roz, because I think he emailed me that. I saw that and I was like, I thought they released that during the trial because I remember, I think that came out during the trial last year, right at the end of last year in December, I think that came out. And I do remember being stunned. Like, he had a whole list of other churches that he was going to visit. And I was thinking, like, is that news or did they release that in the trial or is there something new? What I did see today that was new was that they reported that he actually stopped at another AME church after the massacre. I don't know if parishioners were just not present, so he didn't have an opportunity to shoot more black people, but that was new. And I just saw that today that was published, and you can check that out. Someone put it on my Facebook page right now. After Emmanuel shooting, Dylann Roof stopped at another AME church in Jedburgh. I think that's in South Carolina, Jedburgh, South Carolina.
Can I add in on this, please?
Yes, sir. Oh, and the other shooter that Roz mentioned was Benjamin McDowell. That was the guy who was going to carry out the tech in South Carolina and said he was doing it in the spirit of Dylann Roof. Go ahead, Thomas in New York.
Yeah, thanks, Roz, because he also emailed me that as well. And what I would like to say is we don't know the scope. And, of course, if this was something that was going to be a lot bigger, the FBI would definitely not put that out there, so we would know until years later. But I do recall at the time when this happened, around the next few days prior, it was like 11 or 12 other shootings and other incidents at black churches that followed this. So we don't even know if all of those were in some way correlated. Maybe others didn't go through with it as far as Mr. Rook did. But there was a whole string of incidents right after this.
Absolutely. I remember that we talked about that on the program. It was, there were other incidents, I think, not only that night, but within the same 24 hours in other states where just random whites, race soldiers showed up at churches and were yelling "nigger this" and "I'll kill you" and were banging on the church while black people were present. I think at least one white person got arrested while this happened, and the others, they didn't catch anybody. But it went on for about a good week of that sort of thing. I think a church was set on fire. It was a lot of that that went on at that time. And in fact, I'm just going to read from the report. This is from ABC4. Newly released documents in condemned church shooter Dylan Roof's federal trial show the avowed white supremacist stopped at another AME church on the night of the shooting. When Roof left Emmanuel, Mother Emmanuel AME, on June 17th, he took Interstate 26 to the Jedburgh exit and went to Branch AME Church, according to GPS data that was not presented in court during his federal trial. Why was that not presented? But evidence shows Roof stopped at the church, turned off his GPS unit for several minutes, and prosecutors had planned to show that was a sign he was contemplating another attack. Branch AME also holds a Bible study class on Wednesday night. Roof said in his FBI interview after Shelby, North Carolina, police arrested him that he was too tired after the attack at Emmanuel to continue shooting. But evidence gathered by prosecutors showed he moved onto Branch AME Church, which is on a road with no other commercial businesses that would have attracted Roof on his drive. Further, prosecutors show Roof had driven past Branch AME on other occasions, including once in February when he was in the height of his attack plan. The pastor at Branch AME told the Associated Press on Wednesday that he was shocked to hear his church may have also been targeted by Roof, but he said no one was at the church that night, fortunately. I will stop there. The report goes on. That is, I don't know if they just informed the folks at Branch AME that, you know, this race soldier had stopped at their property as well. To contemplate carry out another attack. The fact that they said this was not a commercial road, that there would have been no purpose for him driving here unless he was going to carry out an attack. I just don't think that we have an accurate understanding of this, of what happened with this event or white people in general. I don't think we paid enough attention to it. I think this should be regarded as one of the most important things to happen in North America in the last 25 years. This Dylan Roof attack, political assassination. I've said that consistently, made an effort to write about that. I just don't think we have an accurate understanding of this event at all, or white people in general, and I will hush there. Other folks have commentary?
And I think that article you just read said it all. The pastor said no one was there. If someone was there, you know, maybe he didn't time the second Bible study as good as he thought. But he went to an empty church, so he couldn't perform any other killing. But I don't think it was that he was too tired to go and shoot some people.
Makes sense. Yeah, study white people. And this is another one. My man Dylan Roof, that's all I have to say forever. I should have asked her about that. My man Dylan Roof said, I consider myself very well-versed in racism. That's all I have to say about white people. He planned meticulously. They've said that over and over. He planned meticulously, as did Benjamin McDowell, who was arrested on weapons charges last week, who said he was acting in the spirit of Dylan Storm Roof. He did not seem ignorant about racism either.
And you know, that's after they tried to say he had mental, or trying to, I guess, try to get him
keep him from the death penalty. And he said that. So it's basically, no, I'm not mentally ill. I'm white. This is what we do. I hate niggas. I'm going to kill niggas. And that's just what it is. And I'm well versed in what I'm doing because I know the history. So it's like Thomas Amillo said, it's all there to be seen. And to me, he's a great example. You can put him up there with Jeffrey Dahmer as to what being white really means and how being white is to be expressed in its ultimate form when it comes to dealing with black people as far as the way white people view how do we deal with niggers. Thank you.
Yep. Folks satisfied? Anything else folks need to get in?
Very last thing I wanted to say, Gus, and very good points, Rob. But it's very ironic that did not come up in the trial, his GPS. I mean, the computer information from his car, that seems like one of the first things, from watching on television police investigations, one of the first things they're going to go after and use. And I wonder if that wasn't there because they were thinking he was going to go for an insane plea and trying to keep him from getting the death penalty by not letting that, because I mean, if you went past the church and other churches and planned it out as meticulously as he did, it definitely takes out the insane.
I don't know. I'm not sure what they mean, because like I said, I think they did present some GPS data at the trial, because they did release that he had planned to go to other churches. And they had released that he had been to these other places, you know, many times in advance, and all that was planned out. So I don't know if it was they cherry-picked which GPS data they were going to release and just didn't put this part out, which is, you know, still the question would be why. Why did they not include that? Because that is huge. But I think they did release some of the GPS data. I'll have to double-check. Like I said, my speculation is that they just cherry-picked.
Oh, yeah, Gus, I had something else race-related. I wanted to ask if you saw the article today about Jamie being racially assaulted in Croatia. Later on, they actually arrested two white men who were involved in hurling racial slurs at him in the Croatian restaurant. Did you see that article?
Yes, sir.
Now, the interesting part is, and what was sad, and I wrote that in my response when I sent it out to you all, was that he's also dating Tom Cruise's ex-wife, Katie Holmes, and from what I understand, they might even be getting married. Like, things are supposed to be, I guess, growing at an exponential rate as far as him volunteering to be raped by this white creature. And I just find it so sad. It reminds me of the Little Rock Nine. You know, you get abused, you get mistreated, you get, you know, racially attacked, and then you go and lay in bed with the person, with the creatures, the entities, the disagreeable beings that are actually committing acts of war against you. Like, that is just so unfathomable to me on a deep psychological level. But being a victim and VGQ and knowing the system and the fact that, you know, as a black person, some of us are going to gravitate towards the people who are in power simply to try and make things easier for ourselves, it's understandable. But it just really just irks the soul to know that. But I just had to throw that out there for those who may not have heard about that incident. I just wanted to know if you saw that article. Thank you very much.
One of our listeners, he wrote, language is important. It was from the article quoting, it was alleged that they used the Croatian version of the N-word, which is CRNCUGA. I don't even know what that, I don't know how to say it. I don't want to take a guess, but it's CRNCUGA. Even in place, and he continues, the listener, he says, even in places with no significant black presence, they have an N-word. We're dealing with inbred features. The system is global. Absolutely. Absolutely. I would be curious. In fact, I'm going to see if I can find that quickly. Did any of the other folks that are with us, did you all have commentary you wanted to get in?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Gus. It's the female caller from New York again. I just emailed you the link to Professor James Small's interview with Sarnetter on how he speaks about what I talked about earlier about the white men in the cave. And the wonderful thing about it is that Sarnetter edited the video so that
he kind of starts off in the middle by asking him, in the beginning by asking him a question about what he's talking about in the middle. So if you play it, you'll hear him talk about when he asks him, who is this white man? And that's when James Smalls brings up the Iceman inheritance and goes into his visit into the caves in France, I think it is. So I just emailed you that link. I just wanted to share. Thank you for listening.
Much obliged. I will post it on my Facebook page immediately. I was checking to see if what this word means that was said in Croatia to Jamie Foxx. So C-R-N-C-U-G-A. It just means niggers. I thought they had picked out something, maybe call him, that meant, I don't know, mud or blackness or niggers. They just made up a whole word that just means niggers in Serbian. World nigger law indeed.
Can you email me the video, please, Gus? And thank you for sending it to Gus, to the female caller.
Yes.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
For sure, no problem.
Any other comments folks need to get in? We'll assume, folks, everybody satisfied? I'll assume folks are good. Again, we should be here tomorrow. Same program time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Workplace racism, if you... Number one, this is not a spectator program, so you should, you know, be able to chime in if you have figured out some things that work well for you with regards to codifying what you do on the job. Great. We definitely need to hear that. If you have problems, some difficulties, that would be great as well. And we all get to learn because a lot of times whatever racists are doing to you on your job, wherever you are in the world, they are probably doing the exact same thing to black people on the other side of the planet. If it's not exactly the same, it's probably really close. So tune in. Let's share. You can always email if you have observations, questions, or just things that you want to share. UntilJustice@gmail.com. But that's tomorrow. Delectable Negro is on Friday, same time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. And compensatory call-in Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Invest if you think the program is constructive. racism-notes.blogspot.com. racism-notes.blogspot.com. Listener supported counter racist radio. When you hit the blog, you will see the PayPal button. If you're not into PayPal, drop us an email. We will get you a physical mailing address. Huge thanks to all the folks who have invested, supported us 8 years, hopefully getting out constructive information on what white supremacy racism is and how it works. Thanks again. And again, if you are not getting constructive information, find something else to do with your time. We have too many problems to be wasting our currency. Let's just get busy about solving problems. As I state consistently, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. I have seen no evidence that we do better combating Darren Wilson, Daniel Holtzclaw, any other race soldiers, badge or no, under the influence. I think it would be best, I'm sure, Dr. Welsing, Dr. Cambon would say that we do not need a beer, alcohol, tobacco, cannabis, any other toxins, narcotics that whites come up with. We do not need any of that. It would be best to put all that in the trash, move forward sober, quickly as possible to solve the problem, racist man, racist woman, racist child. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all. for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.